You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and he says what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. This week, we chat about Chris Jericho, the best talkers in WWE history, Jimmy and Jey Uso, Joey Ryan's Gut Check Challenge, Impact going live, and a whole lot more. My name is David, and I am joined today by my good friend and co-host, Alex. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, man. I just watched the heartbreaking Celtics loss to the Heat, so ready to do the show, man.
Yeah, that was a tough one tonight for the Celtics. We can get into that when we talk about our rants. But if you're an NBA fan, that was a great game tonight, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, when you don't have a dog in the race, you're able to look at things a little more evenly than if you had a team that you favored. So, yeah, it was an excellent ball game.
Excellent game. And we have a lot of great wrestling to discuss tonight. So what do you think? Should we get started?
Let's ring the bell.
World Wrestling Entertainment. There's been some talk that the WWE is going to rush Brock and Triple H instead of waiting for SummerSlam. How do you feel about this, Alex? And does it make a difference whether they do it at the next pay-per-view or at SummerSlam? How do you feel about that matchup in general?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the greater stage that you save a big match for, the more important that it feels. I mean, there was talk a couple of years ago when Batista and Triple H were building up their feud that a couple of times they wanted to pull the trigger on it early. So, I mean, I would say just ride out the summer. There are some interesting things they can do. I find this Big Show John Cena dynamic to be very interesting. I understand it's been done before, but I like what Big Show did on Monday, so I'm looking to see how they follow it up. But, yeah, I would highly suggest saving your big matches for your big shows.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you there. And the thing that's crazy is how different storytelling is now in professional wrestling because you have these monthly spikes, these monthly pay-per-views you feel you have to sell. And so they're looking at Brock and Triple H saying, well, we need, you know, to make sure the next pay-per-view is a big seller and we get a lot of buy rates. And yet Brock and Triple H is a SummerSlam match all the way around, in my opinion. They certainly should wait.
You know, I mean, that's the byproduct of being a publicly traded company. I mean, Vince sits on these investor board meetings, and they're not necessarily fans of professional wrestling. And why are your numbers for this month always down? We'll do something about it. And so I think this is a lot of times what we see is them acquiescing to different outside influences other than inside the wrestling company. And so we get this from time to time, unfortunately.
Well, what do you think about Brock meeting with Dana White and the UFC? And there was a lot of press this week about him actually going to Dana White. Is this a storyline that they're, you know, is the WWE working with UFC or what's going on here?
You know, personally, I don't believe WWE is working with UFC, but I mean, I'm just listening to a lot of other radio shows. People that know Brock Lesnar well don't know Brock Lesnar that well. So, I mean, he's holding a lot of cards close to his chest. And then I think we'll see how this plays out. I mean, it's not a secret that Extreme Rules didn't do anything close to what Lesnar was doing in the UFC. And that was to be expected. But Lesnar and Cena, I think you look at it, and on some levels it was a disappointment for a buy rate. And so I don't know what Lesnar's doing.
Well, when you say Lesnar and Cena, that match was a disappointment, to me, again, because we had just gotten finished with The Rock and Cena in this 12-month build-up at WrestleMania, and now you're trying to sell me on something literally 4 weeks later that's supposed to feel as big. I felt just like the whole Brock Lesnar experience so far, bringing him back to WWE was a great thing, and I love the fact that they have acknowledged his UFC experience, but I am not a real fan of how they've booked this so far. Personally, Alex, I don't really care when he faces Triple H. I'm just not into it.
Yeah, and hopefully they can build up the interest over the next few weeks. I mean, we've only seen two segments between each competitor. The Cena-Lesnar match was rushed, so hopefully with this next match to SummerSlam, hopefully they can correct some of the wrongs they did for the first match.
Yeah, and by the way, we're recording this. I'm in Memphis, Tennessee right now. And if you hear a lot of police sirens and motorcycles, I apologize. Nothing I can do. I wish Jerry the King Lawler were here to join me on the show tonight. But, you know, that's what we got. So I apologize for some audio difficulties. Chris Jericho certainly has created a lot of controversy when he desecrated the Brazilian flag during a recent WWE event. I understand why the locals were upset, but Alex, is it enough to arrest someone? Did the WWE do the right thing suspending him? I love your thoughts on this.
Well, I mean, it's a law that Chris Jericho violated. Ignorance isn't a defense in the court of law.
Okay.
They did give him an opportunity to get him out of the country. Now, the suspension, you know, that's up in the air. I mean, he unknowingly, I guess, broke a law. We've seen controversial heel acts. I remember a couple years ago when JBL was champion, he did the goose step in Germany, which wasn't looked upon too favorably. Save the suspension for the drug failures, I guess.
Yeah, which today, I mean, really, in my opinion, very shocking news. Randy Orton suspended 60 days. It's shocking to me, Alex, because he's had issues with this in the past, and I would have hoped at least had overcome these issues. Apparently not.
You know, what's interesting is I hear debate online just recently about what number strike he was even on, because Randy Orton's had disciplinary problems in the past.
Right.
And then since he's gotten married and had kids, he seemed to turn a new leaf. You don't hear about so many issues coming out of Randy Orton. I mean, you heard about trash hotel rooms. You heard about the different techniques of hazing he would do to people backstage. And seemed like Orton had turned a corner. You know, we'll see what all this shakes out. I mean, the post on the WWE corporate website didn't tell very much. It just said Randy Orton got suspended for a drug violation. I'm anxiously waiting to hear what exactly he fell for. But to Jericho, you know, I mean, did you see the clip on YouTube, David?
I did not. No, should I go check it out?
You know, it's very harmless. I mean, a fan throws a flag in the ring, which, I mean, on some level, I guess that would be considered bad, that you would throw your national flag in the ring.
Right.
And it lands near Jericho, and, I mean, you're putting Jericho in a position where, is he supposed to ignore it? Or, I mean, can he do something to it to get the fans' reaction? That's what he chose to do. I thought the suspension was a little much.
I kind of agree with you, and I think this is a little bit of a sensitive subject because we don't want to seem like we're unfeeling towards, you know, of course, the Brazilian people and their laws of their country, but couldn't they have just said to him, hey, dude, don't do that again?
Absolutely, and that's completely the way I look at it. I mean, obviously, I don't think he went into it with malicious intent. He gave a heartfelt apology, as heartfelt as apologies Chris Jericho can give. You know, I thought it was fine. I didn't really understand the suspension. But, I mean, again, we go back to it's a publicly traded company. Who knows what influenced that decision?
Hey, real quick, Alex, does it seem to you sometimes curious that the suspensions come out for people like Jericho and Randy Orton, you know, during a time where they're not building up SummerSlam or WrestleMania?
You know, I never really thought about that. I remember that pay-per-view a few years ago where they lost like two of the main events due to drug suspensions. It is interesting you bring it up. I don't think there's a correlation.
Jimmy and Jey Uso have been given a decent push for a tag team, and they're almost a throwback team with their matching trunks and unique entrance and double team moves. Do you think the Usos can make their mark working in a promotion that basically downplays tag team wrestling? Alex, I kind of like the Usos because to me they are kind of a throwback. I like that it's not just two random guys thrown together. I kind of like the fact that they have what I would consider a unique team look. I mean, again, you know, they have a dance they do when they come out and a song, and they have a matching outfits when they come to the ring. It reminds me of the Killer Bees and the Rougeos and the Hearts and the Bulldogs, great teams that I enjoyed when I was growing up. I'm not sure they're ever going to be a great tag team, but I kind of like the fact that they are identifiable as a team. What do you think?
Well, to answer your original question, I would say no. Just quite simply no.
You don't think they're going to make a mark in history?
No, unfortunately, because, I mean, they've come along really quickly. I mean, I remember when they debuted, they weren't very good technically in the ring, and now they're having solid matches with Darren Young and Titus O'Neil on SmackDown, who are agreeing themselves – And so they're almost in the teaching role now to another green tag team, which is another tag team that I find, you know, very interesting in the segments they're given. Tag team wrestling isn't a priority of the company, which is interesting because they are giving teams like Titus and O'Neil and Jimmy and Jey Uso, they're giving them little special things to add to their act, like the dancing when the Usos come out. You know, they're showing them some attention, but they're not going all the way. I mean, for fans of tag team wrestling, it is kind of, you know, frustrating. Hey, there's two teams here. We could do something, you know, and there's a couple other teams that they could scrounge together to make an interesting tag team division, but it doesn't seem to be the priority.
Why doesn't Vince think he can draw with tag teams?
There's always been the big push to break tag teams up. So, I mean, I think he feels that, you know, if he can make money, I guess the money's in the singles act, and I can't necessarily disagree. The money is in the singles act. But, I mean, if movie theaters had the same philosophy, then they wouldn't sell popcorn and Skittles. I mean, there's you go for the main event, but then you want a lot of things on the undercard to make it feel like you've paid your money for a good show. And tag team wrestling is something that historically has been interesting, and it may not draw you to the arena, but it's definitely something that'll make you want to sit down and feel like you paid. There's tickets and pay-per-view prices, David. I mean, they've gotten really high. And it seems like now the company would put more emphasis on giving you more bang for your buck.
Well, I remember the WrestleMania Dark match where the Usos wrestled against Carlito and Epico, and I think the other team was Justin Gabriel and Tyson Kidd. I remember saying at the time, I didn't know Tyson Kidd and Justin Gabriel even knew each other. You know, and they were a tag team here at WrestleMania in a dark match, and you know they're of course great individual wrestlers. That's fine, but there was no unity with them as a team, no story with them as a team. At least I feel like with the Usos, there's some story with them as a team. To me, it feels a little bit like this is a team that, you know, the Islanders or Demolition or the Hart Foundation or whatever. At least they have kind of a unified look. I don't think though that Vince is going to continue to push them, and that to me it's kind of a shame.
Yeah, it is unfortunate because a lot of these guys, I mean, they work hard and at mastering a craft that's kind of not something that's interesting to the company. I mean, it's the same thing with the Divas Act. I mean, I was really high on Tamina earlier this year in her feud with Beth Phoenix. I thought they were delivering all cylinders, and then they've seemingly dropped that as well. So, I mean, unless you're drawing the majority of the money, then the interest is kind of waning with your acts, you know. For a while, you'll be featured on TV, and then you'll be pulled. It's unfortunate, but it really is. TNA Impact Wrestling. Joey Ryan was the recent competitor on TNA's Gut Check Challenge. His performance was fine, wasn't mind-blowing, but coming to a company as a heel, can you find success? I felt like this dynamic was what held Alex Riley back from winning his season in NXT. And the reason why I bring that is because I understand we're talking about TNA wrestling, but if you watch season 2 of NXT, I think it was clear-cut that Alex Riley is what the company was looking for, a lot more than Caval. But Caval won the season, I feel like, in a lot of ways because he had the internet backing and because he was a good guy. I feel like if you're a bad guy coming into a company, you have to make a big impact, which usually means laying out a babyface in a very dramatic fashion. I mean, do you think this is a successful way to bring in a heel act, David, especially in a show where you want the fans to buy into the act? Do you think this is a good way to bring a heel into the company?
I love this topic because I actually think it's a great way to bring a heel act into the company. I think if it's done right, then the interest in whoever wins these shows, whether it be Gut Check Challenge or NXT, should be very high. And if it's a heel, you've already got this built-in emotion where people don't like them. But we know, Alex, in wrestling, fans don't have to like somebody for them to get over. So I kind of feel like it's a perfect way to bring in a heel. And I think Alex Riley ended up failing because he just wasn't interesting on his own. He did okay when he was the Miz's lackey or whatever, and I know Miz was hot at the time. But I don't think he failed because he came in as a heel off NXT. I think he just wasn't interesting in the long term. I think for Joey Ryan, let's wait and see. But I think this is a great way to introduce him. Am I wrong about that?
Well, no. I mean, I think and without the Alex Riley comparison, I was just specifically going off his time on NXT. If you watch that season of NXT, he was clear cut in my opinion. Who should have won that season? And I'm a I've enjoyed Loki or Caval's work his entire career.
Right.
But I say Alex Riley was more along the lines of what the company, what fits in that company.
Do you think that Caval won because the lay-cool dynamic worked really well at the time?
You know, it was probably a number of things. I mean, the internet support definitely helped him. He was in an interesting angle with Lay Cool, but then also Miz and Alex Riley were together with Bryan Danielson doing things. But specifically to Joey Ryan, you know, I think there's a way to bring the heel into the company. And generally, I think the best way is if you're debuting a new heel and you want him to get over, he has to lay out a babyface. He wrestled Austin Aries, who's the X Division champion, and he had a match that showcased Austin Aries a lot. Didn't really feel like it showcased Joey Ryan much. Mm-hmm. But in the technical way of wrestling, I felt like Joey Ryan was fine. As a heel, that's what you're supposed to do, is just, especially if you're not winning the match. You're supposed to showcase the babyface a lot. I would wish that if they were to debut a heel, have it be a little bit more impactful, is what I'm saying. But I like Joey Ryan as a performer. So
it's interesting. I think the TNA in general, this gut check challenge is a good way to introduce new stars, whether they be a heel or a face. So let's table that. Maybe we'll come back to that in a few shows from now, because I think that he's got a real chance.
Absolutely. Last week's opening segment got people talking. Hulk Hogan opened the show up by mentioning the show number, which was silly, but he had logical discussion about how he determined who would be challenging for the title later that night. When the other company names challengers in often goofy methods, what are our thoughts on this? Did you see this opening, David? Do you have any idea of what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. I did see it.
Hulk Hogan opened the show up by mentioning the show number, when the show was taped. And which brings me to Dixie Carter actually had a press conference today. Were you aware of this, David?
No, fill me in.
Okay, so Dixie Carter had a press conference today. The press release says that we will be doing more unscripted backstage segments and air production meetings. Here, producers evaluate talent and post-match critiques of talent and focus on more long-term storylines.
Okay.
A little bit more inside stuff. Not really interested in that so much, but Hogan acknowledging why he chose AJ Styles for the title match on Impact is what meant the most to me, because when your competitor, oftentimes John Laurinaitis just comes out and says, you know, tonight you will be facing Mark Henry, or Friday you will wrestle Kane. You know, not much logic thrown in. There's never any discussion of why he came to that conclusion. I'm a fan of that. I like Hogan saying, you know, I'm choosing AJ Styles because this, that, and the other, but I'm not a fan of the more backstage elements. Do you have any thoughts on this, David?
Well, that's interesting, because I think that the direction we're going as a wrestling fan base is more towards the backstage elements. And, you know, maybe, you know, letting us feel like we're getting underneath the curtain or looking inside the operations of a promotion. So I'm a little surprised to hear you say that. I think that's something TNA can do that makes them maybe a bit different than WWE. And we've talked about this a lot on the show, that they need to try to be different. Let me throw it back to you, though. Is anything Hulk Hogan does now just stale? I mean, the fact that he came out and opened the show by mentioning the number one contender or challenger or whatever, I think that's okay. I like that they're trying to do something different, but is it just that the fact that he did it that you don't like?
No, not at all. I wasn't a fan of mentioning the show number. I think he specifically said it was show number 715 or 735, and mentioning when the show was taped. I don't understand how that builds toward the progression of a feud or progression of a storyline or the gained interest in a match. I think on some level some people would be interested in that, but tailor your product to those people in a different medium. I think when you're having a national television broadcast, focus on what's going to get people interested in your matches.
Well, how many people, or what percentage do you think of people follow wrestling on the internet?
You know, I mean, they've actually done studies about it, and it's really low. It's like 25%, I believe, of the overall audience.
God, that's hard to believe.
I mean, that's not an exact quote, but I know there's been studies on it. It's always been lower than what you would believe, but because it's the internet, they end up being the vocal majority.
Yeah. Well, it seems like Hogan is trying to present a product a bit different, you know, something that we don't see in the other promotions. I do think that's what TNA has to do, whether it's Gut Check Challenge or like this with what Hogan did at the beginning of the show. I just think they have to keep thinking different. Again, I think it's one of those things, like, let's revisit this in a few weeks, because let's just let this play out and see if people, you know, kind of latch on to this different type of storytelling.
Impact goes live this week. Is there any difference between live and taped television? You know, what's interesting is that it automatically made me think to what 30 Rock's done the past two seasons, which is go live on one episode a year. And, I didn't look at the ratings pattern for 30 Rock before I made that analogy, but it always piques my interest. You know, anytime you do a live event, it makes it seem, you know, kind of edgy, off the rails, you know. But if it's done live or taped every week, and I don't think it really matters, you know. Once a show is live or taped, it kind of becomes the same thing. But if you do it, I believe, once a year or once every 6 months, and you advertise the fact that, hey, this show is live and we don't know what's going to happen, it could maybe make things a little bit more interesting. Do you have any thoughts on live versus taped?
Well, I look at it like this. If I was going to watch a Dallas Cowboys game and I could watch it live, or I could TiVo it and watch it later, it's just not as exciting when you TiVo it and watch it later. I think live television, especially for sporting events or professional wrestling in this case, it's just more exciting. It is. So if they're going to go live, I think that's a feather in their cap, and they can use this to hopefully draw new viewers. The problem here, Alex, though, is if you're going to go live, you better put on a good show, right? Because now your weaknesses in the wrestling ring are going to be exposed. You don't have the ability to go back and kind of fix the matches and make them look better. Same with the promos. You're going to go live. You better have people that can really talk and really deliver. So do you think the TNA roster is strong enough to deliver live shows each week?
The two names instantly come to mind are Brooke Hogan and Garrett Bischoff. Brooke Hogan's television work, I mean, has it existed? I mean, I haven't checked her IMDb, but I mean, is she, I mean, other than doing a reality show, I mean, has she done much live or live-to-tape television? Which is going to be interesting, because she's going to be in the ring with a lot of women who aren't necessarily, you know, the greatest on television themselves. So it's going to be interesting seeing some of their dynamics. And Garrett Bischoff's in-ring is choppy and very green, to say the least, on a tape show. So when he goes live, it's not going to be beneficial to him, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's interesting. And the thing is, do you think TNA is doing this just to feel like they're as big time as WWE? And of course, because Raw is live, so we have to have a live show.
No, I think it's just something they're testing out during the summer. I think that with the Bellator TNA connection, I think, Dana White did an interview last week with Errol Hawani, and he kept saying the war is coming. I think he really believes that Spike TV is going to go to battle with the Ultimate Fighting Championship. So it'll be interesting to see how TNA and Bellator, could they package a, you know, TNA and Bellator Thursday night event night, you know? I mean, could they package different things together with Impact going live? I think Impact right now is trying to shuffle the cards, seeing what sticks. That way, when Spike kicks it into gear with their entities, then they'll have a tight product.
I do think that live TV is more exciting, and if TNA can pull this off technically and with the skills of the wrestlers, actually as wrestlers, and then doing their promos, I think this is a good thing. We'll see how it goes. They've tried this before, though, right?
Yes, they went live on Monday a few years ago when Hogan and Bischoff and everyone first came to the company. And I don't think there was a noticeable difference in the television between live and taped. Honestly, live and taped really hasn't made that big of a difference to me. Everyone points to spoilers, but generally when I read spoilers, they're usually so long, I usually forget what happened in the opening segment by the time I get to the end. And by the time I watch the opening segment, I forgot what happened at the end anyway. So it's never really mattered to me, but I think if you make live special once in a while, I think it's important. But it'll be interesting to see what they do, because I think this is going to last throughout the summer.
Wild card topic number one. Recently, the WWE released a countdown of the best talkers of all time, and Stone Cold Steve Austin was ranked number one. Did Rowdy Roddy Piper get robbed? And how about Hulk Hogan and Randy Macho Man Savage being listed behind Jake Roberts? Well, for me, Alex, this was a really interesting countdown. Of course, all countdowns are intended to create controversy and get people talking. I don't have a huge problem with Stone Cold being number one. I do think Roddy Piper is probably the best wrestling talker of all time. I had a much bigger problem with Jake the Snake Roberts being listed ahead of Macho Man and Hogan. I thought Hogan and Macho Man, if for nothing else, were great on the mic and great at building their character, great at building a storyline. Can you name one memorable commentary or promo that Jake Roberts ever did? He was tremendous in the ring, tremendous psychology in the ring. I thought he was a good interview, but certainly not better than Macho Man, Randy Savage.
I mean, I think you bring up a lot of good points. I mean, first off, on Stone Cold Steve Austin being ranked number one, Stone Cold Steve Austin was the man in the past 30 years. If he's ranked number one on almost any list, I can't argue with it. Steve Austin was a huge phenomenon in wrestling. It was really incredible what Steve Austin was. I think because he's been around so often, I think people kind of forget what he was. But in 99, 98, 2000, I mean, nothing was ever hotter in professional wrestling than Steve Austin. So I'm completely fine with him being number one.
Although, let me jump in and say real quick, I agree with that, except Piper's Pit is without a doubt the greatest wrestling interview segment of all time. And it's interesting. I agree with you in that Stone Cold was the best on the mic, I don't know, kind of like during that time period in the ring, but wasn't Piper the best interviewer of all time?
It depends on what you consider it depends on what the point of an interview was. I mean, Piper did an excellent job of getting himself over, but I mean, how many matches were built off Piper's Pit? I mean, the one I can think of is him versus Jimmy Snuka, which did, from what I understand, you know, good business for the time.
Well, and Hogan and Andre had their best segments on Piper's Pit.
Yes, and that was the second example I was going to brought up, where Piper had to take a more back role instead of going forward. I mean, there's been plenty of guys throughout the years. Gordon Solie comes to mind. When a lot of guys sometimes weren't the best promos and they didn't script them, Gordon had to walk people through a lot of promos. Piper did a lot of early work with Gordon Solie. But Jake Roberts, I mean, isn't he a guy that the company's kind of always overrated? I mean, Roberts was an excellent, excellent talent. But, you know, you watch the DVD and they talk about his whispering promos. I mean, what's the promo we remember from Jake Roberts?
Well, I had a lot of good memories of his promos, but it was more of a feel of what he delivered. You know, whereas I think I could quote 5 or 6 to 10 Macho Man promos verbatim. I mean, he was to put Jake Roberts ahead of Randy Savage to me is blasphemy. And Hulk Hogan just really gets, I think, diminished in history because he wasn't a great wrestler, but he was a fantastic promo.
You know, I mean that's part of being a good promo is remembering the catchphrases, remembering the one-liners. You know, I mean there are a few things here that I remember from Roberts, but I mean, there again, I ask you, what was the quintessential promo he cut that led to the big match? We can think of a lot of promos where Randy Savage would cut promos that led to big matches. Yeah. Same thing for Hulk Hogan. Even Ultimate Warrior going into WrestleMania 6. It's interesting how, when you take a historical slant on some of these guys, some of them get a little bit more overrated and underrated. Jake Roberts was an excellent promo. I'm not saying he wasn't. But to put him... you know, in the list, you're absolutely correct. It's created a cause controversy. It's one person's opinion. I would rank Hogan and Savage above Jake Roberts and even Ronnie Piper myself.
Sorry, but I did throw a lot at you there for a short topic. I'm all fired up.
Wild card topic number two. Chikara Pro Wrestling presents its second iPay-per-view, Chikara Source Rex, How to Hatch a Dinosaur, this weekend on Go Fight Live. Would you consider ordering an iPay-per-view from a smaller wrestling company, David?
Well, I would, although you and I have had this discussion before that sometimes they have these technical issues that, you know, just are really a pain in the butt. And you know, whether it's going to start on time and there's going to be some technical issues with my streaming and everything. So if I could be guaranteed that the technical part of it was going to be fine, I don't have any problem with that. How about you?
You know, that's the unfortunate thing about it, too, is that we're dealing with companies on a lower budget. And so there are some issues. But I will say with GoFi Live, if there's been live issues, they fix it for the stream later. June 2nd is actually my wife's birthday, so I won't be watching the show live. But I'll order it, and I'll check it out later that evening. Chikara presents a good product. And then I heard you and Jamie discuss on one of your wildcard topics, you know, independent wrestling companies, and then you and I have discussed it as well. But I think the beautiful thing about internet pay-per-view is if you're an independent wrestling promotion and you were able to develop a national following, albeit as small as it is, you were able to directly deliver the product to your fans that want it via the internet, which is where a lot of these people are hearing about your promotion anyway. And for the reasonable cost of $15, you can check out a Chikara Pro Wrestling show and say you've done it once. I'm a big fan of internet pay-per-view. I'm a big fan of the bigger independent companies jumping on internet pay-per-view. Listen, if you're AWP and you run shows out of Winnemucca, Nevada, I want to suggest you going on iPay-Per-View. But if you're Chikara Pro Wrestling and you have a large internet following, why wouldn't you be on internet pay-per-view?
Oh, then that's a great point. If you and I ran a wrestling promotion, we would want to be on internet pay-per-view as well. So as long as you get the technical side of it taken care of and make sure that the people paying for the shows aren't going to have any problem actually streaming the action, it's a great idea. Alex, why Chikara Pro Wrestling? What do you like about that promotion?
Pro wrestling can be a lot of things to a lot of different people. Chikara Pro Wrestling is very much in the comic book world. They present their professional wrestling as very serious, but yet very fantasy-based. There's a lot of interesting and unique characters you only see in Chikara. I've heard a lot of old-school wrestling people who I respect their opinions, but not biggest fans of Chikara. They see it as presenting wrestling as a joke. But I feel like if you give Chikara an opportunity and you watch maybe two of their shows where you can kind of understand what they're doing, I think that you'll see that they do treat wrestling very professionally, very respectfully. But their approach on it is different, which you and I always discuss. If you're competing with World Wrestling Entertainment, which if you're a wrestling company, you are, you have to present a different product. And I think Chikara takes it to the extreme.
With a name like Chikarasaurus Rex, How to Hatch a Dinosaur, does that sound kind of juvenile? Does that make you want to actually order the show?
You know, if you're a fan of Chikara, absolutely. But if you're not a fan of Chikara, I can absolutely see where, man, that's a goofy name for a show. And you'd be absolutely correct. And, you know, if you think it's a goofy name for a show, then maybe Chikara wouldn't be your wrestling company. Because, like I said, they do take liberties a lot of times with professional wrestling. You can look up numerous YouTube clips of them involving a lot of comedy into their matches. But Chikara does have a good balance of comedy and serious wrestling. And I think for an alternative to professional wrestling, listen, if you're happy with what you're getting out of the top two organizations and you're able to supplement your viewing habits with other things, then I wouldn't suggest a Chikara show. But if you're interested in something else that pro wrestling has to offer, I think Chikara Pro Wrestling is a quality wrestling organization that I would tell people to check out.
Hey, real quick, these internet pay-per-views, if you order them, you don't have to watch them when they're happening? You don't have to watch them live? You can watch them later?
Absolutely. GoFight Live maintains a server, and it usually takes about 6 hours after the show, I believe. But the show will get posted onto their server. So June 2nd, you can buy the show, or you can buy the show before that. But then when they post the show to their server, you can still watch it. I mean, there was a Ring of Honor pay-per-view I ordered in December, and it's still on the server, and I can still access that show. And now with technology, you can hook an HDMI cable from your laptop to your television. You can watch it on decent quality on your television. So I'm excited to see that medium go forward.
Blast from the past. Author Greg Klein has just completed an interesting biography of the Junkyard Dog called The King of New Orleans, How the Junkyard Dog Became Wrestling's First Black Superstar. Alex, I just finished reading this book. In fact, next week I'm going to interview Greg Klein and get his insight into not only the JYD, but the New Orleans city itself during that time period, Mid-South Wrestling, and what this all meant to professional wrestling history. I'm very excited to talk to Greg. This is an excellent book, and I was wondering, what are your memories of the Junkyard Dog?
Unfortunately, I mean, I can't say they're extremely positive. I mean, when I first started watching professional wrestling, JYD was past his heyday. But I'm an avid tape collector, and I have a lot of Mid-South Pro Wrestling, and I don't have the weekly episodic. You know, I don't have every single week. But, I mean, from the sporadic times I've seen JYD in Mid-South and in Georgia Championship Wrestling. I mean, he was extremely popular, extremely over. And his feud with the Freebirds, where they blinded him, and they had a big blindfold cage match in New Orleans. I mean, all that stuff sounds so exciting that I wish I could have experienced it live or experienced it at least watching it on television. So, like I said, unfortunately, my actual memories of J1D may not be the most positive, but I've seen a lot of that stuff that made him the legend that he was. Quite the amazing career.
Well, I've got to go back and watch the matches and the stories from Mid-South, because my first experience with JYD was, you know, I'm a WWF guy. You know, I've always said that. And I remember him in the Wrestling Classic when he won that tournament, beating Randy Savage by countout in the finals. I remember him on those early Saturday night main events. Of course, WrestleMania 1 even, and challenging for the Intercontinental Championship. That's basically my memory of Junkyard Dog, and not his best work. He had a lot of drug problems at the time, and of course, by WrestleMania 4, he was on his way out of the company. So it's really amazing that someone who meant so much to a promotion like Mid-South and to a region like he did in New Orleans didn't have a very long run on top. You know, you think about the guys who are still wrestling today, Alex, who are still active today. The Junkyard Dog was basically done by the age of 35, and it's a really interesting story for the Junkyard Dog, and people today may look at him and think that, you know, oh, well, you know, he didn't really do much of professional wrestling. Read the book or go back and look at his old matches, because he was a very important figure, maybe not a Hall of Famer in the sense of like Ric Flair and The Rock and Bret Hart and these guys, but he certainly made an impact in an interesting time when the territories were falling apart in professional wrestling.
I mean, he made such a big impact that, I mean, Bill Watts tried with Butch Reed and numerous other guys to recreate the success that JYD had and didn't. JYD was able to connect to the audience, and also he was involved in some really good storylines, and that Mid-South television was incredible. I would suggest anyone sitting down and watching Mid-South television from about 81 to 87, incredible, incredible stuff. So I'd be very interested to read that book.
Hey, Alex, we're going to go ahead and wrap the show up unless you got something on your mind right now or, what you know, anything you want to get off your chest?
Well, you bring that up. The new Spider-Man movie.
What?
Seriously. I mean, this is a reissue clearly aimed at teenagers. I'm not going to see it. I get it. Superhero movies are big business today. I see why they're doing it. But this one seems so cheap. I'm willing to accept prequels, sequels, and even brand changes. But I'm not going to accept this reissuing of the Spider-Man story. Very much frustrates me.
Didn't know they were making a new Spider-Man movie, but I don't think there's a need for it. So I don't know if I'm going to check that out. Of course, my wife and I never go to the movies anyway because we have kids. But I may be the only person. Do you mind if I get something off my chest, too?
No, go ahead.
All right, I'm sorry. This is very therapeutic for me before we wrap the show, but am I the only person who doesn't have an iPhone or an iPad? I mean, I feel like I'm literally the only person. And I know they're great products, but I keep hearing from people, oh, I love my iPhone, I love my iPad, but, you know, they don't play Flash video. And that blows me away. Like, why doesn't Flash video work on these devices? It seems like iPhones, iPads, all these iTouches, they're way ahead of their time. And yet, there's a pretty standard technology, Flash video, that doesn't work on these devices. I guess that maybe there's some kind of business agreement with Apple and whatever. I just think it's bizarre. And so apparently, some of the websites like ESPN may not play properly on an iPad. Do you have one of these devices, Alex?
I love my iPhone. But I also have a Kindle Fire, which plays Flash, so this hasn't been an issue for me.
But why does a Kindle Fire play Flash and an iPhone doesn't? That doesn't make sense to me.
Maybe someone didn't get paid properly. I don't know.
This has got me all fired up. Now, don't forget to check out the OWW website at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. You can email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM, that's OWWCOM, to get all program updates and announcements. We'll also be posting directly to the official OWW Radio Facebook homepage. Until next time, I am David.
And I'm Alex.
We hope everyone listening enjoyed the program, and we'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.
move